This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. You're listening to Place to Be Nation's Main Events, a roundtable experience looking at today's pro wrestling landscape. And now, here is your host, Scott Criscolo.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to episode number 12 of your home for everything modern day professional wrestling, PTBN's Main Event. I am your host, Scott Criscolo. We have got a pretty damn good show this week, as we are on a fortnight of Money in the Bank, which is this Sunday night from one of the Core Four's old backyard, the Hub, otherwise known as the TD Garden in Boston, Massachusetts. That'll be the meat and potatoes of our show this evening. We got some other news tidbits, including, and this is not a joke, it's not April Fool's Day. I don't know if Jay Hinchey will get upset. Legit TNA news. This isn't like, you know, we'll talk about it later. We're actually going to talk about it first. Huge. Before I do that, let me dive into the Core Four, all here this week. We'll begin with the Bengal of the Bayou, who joined us for the Doctor and I for this week's edition of Police TV Nation's Extra Point. He is awaiting the Joel Embiid pick, Mr. Andrew Reich. Do you have your Orlando Magic jersey going?
Nah,
on the back.
I don't know who they're taking. It's so up in the air. The crazy part about that draft is that it's so front loaded, but nobody knows who's going where. It's a good one.
Marcus Smart to the Lakers at number 7. That's my pick.
That's who I got.
Reich, pleasure as always. Next up, my favorite person on the planet, who is actually not going to be a cardboard cutout or a papered statistic for a TNA crowd, but a real live person. He is a great contributor to PlayStation.com, as is Andrew Reich. He's also the purveyor of Marvel.com, Mr. Ben Morse.
Pleasure to be here on this podcast tonight. I understand over in Studio B we've got Kevin Kelly, a diva, and also Maria.
Yep, and they're cruising tonight. Something about butts? I don't know. Anyway, Benjamin, pleasure as always, my friend.
My pleasure.
Next up, the guy who kind of keeps me in business because he watches everything on CBS, including Two Broke Girls. He is a PTB original, Mr. Jordan Duncan.
Hey, let's just get the... What's happening? All right.
Was that Jervis Cambelli's theme music?
Hey, let's just get the TNA news out of the way, guys. CM Punk is going to be at TNA's next New York show.
Yeah. Are you... We don't want some other website suing us.
JD, I played that to help you get to help you stay hyped.
I am always hyped, Ben.
Oh God. If he stops watching CBS, then Mojo Rawley might be on this show. So
now the Big Brother's on. I am hyped for the summer.
All summer.
Are you gonna get hyped or stay hyped?
Probably a little of both.
Mojo Duncan. JD, always a pleasure. And finally, I feel like I haven't introduced this guy in like 10 years. Another one of my favorite people on the planet, because he took a picture with my new favorite wrestler. Take a backseat, Triple H, because you are no JC, Jervis Cottonbelly. Welcome back, Steve Willie.
Thank you very much. And Ben may be the purveyor of Marvel.com, but Jervis is the purveyor of Gentlemania.
Woohoo! I like his mask. That was a very cool mask. And he actually has cotton on his belly. So it's a gimmick that actually makes sense. Son of a gun. Willie, it's a pleasure as always. Guys, we'll get into Money in the Bank in a bit, because I think it's, as much as I'm going to be there on Sunday, I'm very skeptical of things. You might need to change my mind tonight. I'm a little concerned. I'm never concerned going into WWE pay-per-views, but something's bugging me about this show. I don't know why.
No Triple H match. That's what's bugging you.
Well, that's been bugging me for weeks and months, and I'm never going to hear Evolution's theme again.
No Jervis Cottonbelly match either.
Well, that's true, too.
Yes.
I think Triple H would send him to NXT. He would do that. He'd have to fire Josh Matthews. Oh, wait a minute. Oh, never mind.
Oh, no.
We'll talk about that,
I just got a nosebleed. Did anyone else?
Just got a nosebleed. All right. Let us legitimately begin, guys.
Oh, I just got that joke.
With TNA news.
TNA news. Yes. Total nonstop anarchy.
All right, guys. We'll see you next week in 2 weeks on the main event.
Yeah, let's, yeah, exactly.
Because?
Who's playing the Wyatt's theme? No. All right, guys. It was announced earlier this week. Well, as we're recording, it was what? Today, right? That Bound for Glory, the WrestleMania of TNA, its 10th anniversary, will be live from the Kotokuen Hall in Tokyo, Japan, on Sunday, October 15th, I think it is, or 14th, something like that. Wow. I can't say I'm not surprised. We've seen pictures, crowds of the pits. They are in the city this week, and I'll partially say that there's a novelty there, but being a Northeast guy like you are, Benjamin, and I, we're pretty – the Northeast always soaks in any kind of wrestling around. That's why I think a Jervis Cottonbelly's crew coming there soon would be a great idea. I'll start with you, Willie. Is this a smart idea, both creatively and business-wise, for TNA to do it in Tokyo?
I'll take it one step further. As a fan, I think it's a cool idea. It would be something different. Creatively, I think it will be, you know, they have this working agreement with Muda's organization. So it's something they want to build on, and I think it's going to help in that way. Smart? Boy, if Muda's group is helping write off some of the money, I think it's smart. Otherwise, it could be a big loser. I mean, they have to ship a lot of people out there to... So I was reading today that hall only seats about 2,000. So they're not going to make it up in ticket money, and they're definitely not going to make it up in buys.
Right.
So business-wise, I'd say no. Creatively, I think it's pretty fun. I'm excited as a fan.
Ben, what do you think? I agree with I do agree with Steve in the sense that business-wise, I don't know what kind of scratch they're going to make off this show. Is there anything fiscally redeeming that does come out of this?
I think Steve nailed it pretty well creatively. It's a really cool idea. Business-wise, it seems iffy. Fiscally, I mean, the only way I could see them making any returns on it is kind of establishing a beachhead in Japan. But then it's the type of thing where, what are they going to do? Are they going to tour there regularly? Are they going to, you know, travel there? Are they going to co-brand with Muda's promotion somehow? I don't really know. The thing about TNA, though, when you ask, like, is this a good decision, there's almost, like, it's impossible for anything not to be a good decision with TNA because there's nothing to lose. So why not? Why not try something? I'm curious, when you said they're going to be airing it live, I mean, how are the logistics of that going to work? Are they going to have the show, you know, just match up to when it would air in the U.S. and just have it, you know, in the middle of the day in Japan or the day before, or... is it going to be tape delay like SummerSlam was back in 92? I'll be interested to get the actual logistics of that. But all that aside, like Steve said, I think creatively it's just like it's an attention grabber. And there's not much TNA could do right now that grabs attention. So the fact that we're talking about it on the main event shows that they're doing something right.
That is like, that's a great way to put it. You know, if we're talking about it, then
yeah,
it must be something legitimate, for God's sake.
I think after 12 episodes, we finally got under Dixie's skin enough
that she had to do something.
Yeah,
I'd love to believe that. Reesh,
it's not
what do you
that far fetched.
And Reesh, what do you think?
I agree a lot with what Steve was saying about business wise. I don't know how stable of a move it is, really. But to Ben's point, more is what I'm leaning to is that, you know, your TNA, you're way below second tier in the North American wrestling. What difference does it make to just try to do something where your biggest show is in a place where you know you'll get more fans than you would in the United States? Because if they'll probably get up to, I don't know how much that hall fills up, but I would bet they could get about 15,000 people in there. And you could probably put together a really good card creatively, like they were saying. You could put it together really good wrestling matches along with Muda's promotion. And even though the buys will be bad based on it, the fact that it's tape delay and all that, the buy rate on their shows are so poor anyway that I don't think it's going to matter. The bottom line is almost going to be exactly the same as the Bound for Glory shows that were in the years past when they were in the United States. The most interesting part to me is the fact that they're an American wrestling promotion for their one of their biggest shows is exporting the show overseas, because you don't see it that often. I know UFC does it sometimes where they'll go to Japan and Brazil, and Ben talked about SummerSlam going to the United Kingdom in 1992, but outside of that, you know, the farthest they've gone out outside of that is Puerto Rico and Canada. So this is pretty risky, but it's a good risk because you can get good gate at the arena itself in terms of merchandise. It hurts you only in that you can't get a lot of North American fans to come see your product. I mean, who the hell is going to go do a fan fest for Bound for Glory in fucking Tokyo, you know, if you live in the United States?
Well, that's the thing. I was just thinking about that myself, actually. And I wasn't sure if you heard it a second ago, Rish, but Willie was correct. This place seats 2,005 seats.
That's a small venue, but at least you can sell it out.
And it's October 12th, which... I gotta be honest with you. I think, is that a Sunday? Yeah, it is a Sunday. Okay, it is a Sunday. Yeah, so if it's 8 o'clock here, what the hell is it over there? Like 9 o'clock the next day?
Yeah, it's Monday.
Yeah, they would have to tape delay it. What do you think, JD?
You know, I think the tape delay might actually help, because TNA, nobody buys their pay per views, so if they do a show and it's crazy good. That might actually help. Like, hey, there's an awesome pay-per-view.
That's a good point. That's a really
good
point.
If we know ahead of time, like, hey, this was awesome. I mean, the thing with TNA is you run the risk it might suck really bad, too. They're very inconsistent. But I think this is something I was going to say about TNA if we ever got to it. I didn't think we ever would. I think what's smart, I don't know about going to Tokyo for it, but I think they need to start booking 2,000-seat venues instead of 12,000. You know, Ring of Honor just had a pay-per-view, and they had a sellout. And it was like 1,400, but you could still call it a sellout. Whereas TNA gets 1,400, but their venue is 18,000. It looks like a total failure, you know?
I agree.
So they start booking places that they can fit in, and it looks like they're packed and crammed. You know, that makes their product look hotter. It makes their product look like something that people are actually a little more interested in. The biggest surprise to me is that TNA is planning to be around in October. So, That's pretty good on them, you know?
Yeah, I agree with JD on that. I remember they tried to make a big deal out of the fact that they booked the AT&T Center in San Antonio, which is where the Spurs play. And in hindsight, looking at the way that the people like congregated in it, it was one of the worst decisions they ever made, because they barely filled up even 1/4 of the arena, and it just looked bad.
Right, and they can make it look okay on TV, but the pictures get out on the internet all the time of those empty TNA shows. We've all seen them. You know, where they've got everyone pushed into one tiny little section. And if you got an arena of 2,000, you're not going to have to deal with that problem.
Yeah.
And if I think you got bigger problems.
And I think they learned their lesson with what they did in Britain right before in January, where they didn't – I don't think they played in a really big arena, but they filled that place up to capacity, and the crowd was pretty hot. Japan's a different type of crowd, so I don't know if you're going to get a – for Bound for Glory, a crowd where everybody's jacked to see the biggest show of the year, but you'll get a crowd that'll at least fill up the stands and be a little bit excited about what they see. The problem with it is
Korakuen Hall's a little bit of a different venue, though, because that's where UCW used to run when they went to Japan.
Mm.
So the crowd's not quite the stereotypical.
Is that the same place where All Japan used to have their TV tapings, or was that New Japan?
All Japan used to be there too.
Yeah.
Now,
I believe so.
Speaking of the Japans, all new all. Now Baba is
dead.
As is this segment. All right, next.
The wife is not.
All right, so he had the. All right,
she's dead inside, but she's not actually dead.
So Muda and that's what I meant to say. Muda. I keep forgetting Baba died. Muda and he's All Japan.
No, he has his own promotion now.
Wrestle One is the promotion that Muda deals with.
Okay.
New Japan's the hot one over there.
All right. Yeah. Is that the one that the guy that Meltzer likes? That he always gives him five-star matches?
Yeah, that's where AJ Styles is.
Right,
but
what's his name? What's the dude that the Japanese wrestler?
Oh boy.
Tanahashi?
Yeah, Tanahashi. Is he in the promotion that's connected with TNA?
No.
Not connected with TNA, but... No?
No.
He's in the promotions connected with ROH.
Yeah, the big coup was that ROH got a deal with New Japan, and that's where Tanahashi is.
Okay, all
and
right.
New Japan, I don't know too much about it, but I've heard, you know, through the grapevine that New Japan is on the rise, that they're actually
having Tanahashi. I thought it was Okada.
You see, I don't know.
I'm thinking of both, JD, because Tanahashi's the one that's the six-time champion, and he's the one whose matches. I guess there were two in 2013 that Meltzer gave 5 stars
to. Yeah, Meltzer loves Tanahashi.
Yeah. So the only reason I'm saying that is – well, the reason I'm saying that is – excuse me. Obviously, they're going to jack this card up and not just have their pitiful slugs filling up this show. So they're obviously going to have, you know – I mean, I'm sure that the Japanese crowd is going to be thrilled to watch
How
Magnus versus Lashley.
How could you call bromance pitiful slugs?
You know, what?
How could you call bromance pitiful slugs?
No, don't even get me started, bromance.
Pitiful slugs sound like a tag team right out of Chikara, I think.
Yes. the beautiful people versus the pitiful slugs. No, but I mean, if you're going to – I mean, if you're expecting a main event to be anything versus Lashley, those people in Japan, then you're done. You're done. I hope they even know what the hell they're doing with this card. My question is they've got to be at least filling this card with local talent too.
Oh yeah,
kind of like the way you know what it is. Kind of like the way Jim Crockett Promotions used to do, like the first three Starcades, where they would kind of pick a match from Florida, like the Florida Heavyweight Title Beyond the Line, the Western States. Like they'd pick some of the other NWA promotions to kind of fill the card a little bit and kind of maybe get some.
Or like those WCW Super Shows where you'd have main events or top matches where WCW guys, North American wrestlers, would face each other.
Right.
But then you'd get a match where you'd have like Hiroshi Haas and Kensuke Sasaki versus the Steiner brothers.
Fuck
the house.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying. What do you think, Ben? They've got to be thinking that. Because if they're just going to go there and fill up that card with the drivel they've got now,
wasting their money. I mean, even at Lockdown, they had some Wrestle1 guys wrestling. The thing for me is I don't know who's on the Wrestle1 roster. I mean, I'm not super familiar with Japanese wrestling, but you know, I have a cursory working of it. And having just gone to the ROH show that had New Japan, I mean, those guys were incredible.
Mm-hmm.
But like Andrew said, New Japan's the hot promotion right now. I don't know what the deal is. I think All Japan, their deal is basically Muda left them a year or two ago and tried to start his own group. Yeah. So this is kind of an upstart.
This started last year, yeah.
Well, the other thing, too, is that Muda just absorbed Tajiri's company because Tajiri's second promotion just basically died. So they're taking a lot of talent in.
Regardless, I don't know who's on the Wrestle1 roster. I don't know if it's All Japan guys who came with Muda. I don't know if it's new guys. I think certainly they'll have Japanese talent on the card. It would be foolish not to. But I don't know who these guys are. I don't know. I know the guy who was X Division champion, Sonata, is on their roster. But I don't know who else is. I don't know if there's any like big names outside of Muda.
A lot of the guys that left were with All Japan. Kind of that happened to All Japan years ago when Misawa left to start Noah. Yeah. And it's kind of the same thing. Muda took a lot of guys with him.
But here's my question, JD. Wasn't All Japan was kind of similar to TNA, they were the kind of the third promotion behind New Japan and Noah. Like they were both bigger, right? All Japan was kind of the number three in Japan.
After Misawa left, they became that.
The creation of Noah came from the exodus from All Japan.
Right, I know, but that was 10 years ago. I'm saying like even in recent years, All Japan. So to say that it's basically the Great Muda and a bunch of All Japan cast-offs might not be.
I know what you're saying.
It's kind of faint praise.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I'm saying.
I think you'd almost have more interest in putting two of the Japanese guys in a match if you were doing it here in the States, because if you live in Japan, why not just wait for Muda's company to have them wrestle each other, you know?
Yeah. Right.
So
yeah. So I mean, I think it is kind of a neat PR move for TNA in the short term, but I think as time progresses, I hope they have a plan in place, and this isn't just another dumb Dixie hair trigger move to look where we're going everybody, because I heard that everybody loves Japanese wrestling, so let's do something there. Yay.
Sky, can I ask one question? Do you think this adds prestige to the event though?
In whose eyes?
In the eyes of maybe casual North American wrestling
fans. I think that's the point. I mean I'm half kidding, but I think that's what I think somebody told Dixie, hey Ring of Honor's got like this Japanese deal, maybe we should do one too. What a great idea. Yay! And she runs around in her stupid, you know.
Andrew asked if it adds prestige to the casual North American wrestling. I don't think the casual North American wrestling fan knows what TNA is to be honest.
Yeah.
I think this is a move for hardcore fans.
True.
You know?
Yeah. It's a
move
for
them.
And
it wouldn't put them on the map really in any way whatsoever.
But I also, to get back to something that Reese said a little while ago, they bank their Bound for Glory weekends on this, you know, on the whole VIP, kind of like, you know, kind of like WWE does with Access, and
I don't think they're making that much off.
They probably aren't either, but I mean really,
have you seen their Hall of Fame ceremony? It's literally a hotel lobby.
It's like the way WWE did it in 94, 95, yeah. You know, Boba Brazil and those guys. Anyway, we'll talk
just,
I mean,
just to play devil's advocate before we close out though, Scott, just to say, like, maybe it's not just Dixie reacting. I will say the one thing TNA has always been strong with, always, has been their international presence. We know they do well in England. We know they do well in, like, you know, they had that promotion in India. So it's not inconceivable, even if the origin was a bad Dixie idea, them becoming almost like an international touring company is possibly not the worst idea in the world for them.
Uh-huh.
Right.
They're never going to have tremendous North American success. So if they say, like, you know what? Part of the year we're in the U.S., part of the year we're in England, maybe we do a couple shows in Japan, they could draw better gates. The only question is, I think they have to tremendously reshape their roster, and probably a lot of the guys who are not going to want to travel, because, you know, part of the appeal of TNA is you don't have to travel as much as WWE. It may be the sort of thing where the salvation of TNA may come from, hey, you know, we've got a roster that is one-third from Japan, one-third from England, one-third from America, and we try to make as much money as we can in all these different countries. It may actually be TNA becoming what we've always wanted them to be, and that's a true alternative.
Yeah. It's a good pipeline to have.
You know, if you want to go down a rabbit hole, Google TNA ratings in, like, Japan or Australia, you'll see some really crazy numbers that they can't be real.
Well, tell it. Do you have in front of you, JD?
Yeah, hang on one second. I remember looking at one when we first started talking. Somebody said that their TNA, their ratings in Japan, they get like 20 million people watching their show.
I'll
tell you one quick story. When I went to Ring of Honor in 2009 in Houston, they had two German guys, and I asked them, who's your favorite wrestler? They said AJ Styles. I said, okay, why? He says the only show in Germany in his area is Impact. So Impact gets big ratings in Germany.
It's not really possible.
In certain areas at that time.
Well, you know, Europe is a hotbed for anything wrestling. They'll watch anything. I mean, when TNA does those tours of England in early January, mid to late January, they get good crowds. Although when they do like the four straight shows, when I watched them in 2013, by the fourth show, you could tell the crowd could give two shits.
And we're talking about the aesthetic part of it, the wrestling part of it. I will say this. In 2008, 2009, and years like that, they had a yearly Global Impact show for TNA, and those shows, in terms of matches, were great. Now, this was different talent compared to what we have in TNA now. Now, you're asking guys like Bobby Lashley and Eric Young and Brooke Tessmacher to wrestle some of these Japanese people. That's not going to be the same as when Kurt Angle and AJ Styles and Christopher Daniels were wrestling these guys.
Let's not forget they do still have Austin Aries. They still got the American Wolves. They've lost a significant amount of talent.
Just the Wolves.
Oh, sorry.
Now you just
cost
Dixie Carter like $5,000 or something.
Don't worry.
Oh, they're shutting down then.
Once they put that six-sided ring in there, Austin Aries might just leave out a protest.
Well, that's true, too. All right, we talked too much about this because now we've lost all our listeners, so let's go back to what people actually care about us talking about. So,
like the ratings in Europe and TNA?
Yeah, Europe. What's going on in Sweden? All right.
We actually have hundreds of listeners in Germany.
Really?
Don't forget the Isle of Tonga.
Haku is listening?
As is the Lithuanian snow troll.
And the Cottonbelly family of the Netherlands, no. All right, let's talk about the meat and potatoes of our show this evening, which is, of course, Money in the Bank. It takes place this Sunday in Boston. There will be a contingent of Place to Be Nation there. Before we get into the card, let's talk a little bit about Raw Monday, the go-home edition, which you can read my recap on placetobenation.com. I still feel this sense of confusion and uncertainty going into this show. I really do think that Daniel Bryan's injury really messed with their heads. And I hate to say this, but I almost feel like it's like Nitro 99. I feel like they're kind of booking on a napkin right now. You know, I don't know if they're quite sure what they're going to do over the next 2 months. There's rumors he may not be back till Night of Champions, and that would suck. JD, if do you feel this way that I feel? Do you feel that there's this weird uncertainty and kind of unnerving feeling about the product at this moment?
Oh yeah, 100%. Part of it too is like, I mean, I think are we going to do our predictions for the show in the next segment or sometime tonight? Like, I was looking at that earlier today. They have like 3 matches announced for the show, you know? I think that says a lot about, you know, they don't, in a way you can't blame them because Daniel Bryan was their champion and they had a lot of stuff penciled in. We heard a lot of rumors, and for that to just blow up in their face, that does suck for them.
I got 4 official matches, and we'll get to them. We'll get to
4.
Them tonight.
Yeah, the Divas match.
The Divas match. So.
Yeah. But yeah, especially with the second ladder match being announced, and I'll talk about that a little more if we do match by match. But a big one I think is Cesaro's inclusion in the title match. I think that shows panic, because I think if they had gone with their plans, and I think if they sat down and said, what can we do? I think Cesaro would be in the briefcase match because I think he's who they wanted to win it originally. But I think they panicked, put him in the title match, made the ladder match a title match. Then they said, oh, crap, now we don't have a briefcase, so they threw that one together. It seems like they're kind of falling behind and they're trying to catch up with themselves.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%, JD, on the whole, because when Triple H was announcing the guys for the
Yes.
And we'll talk about it. We're like, what the hell? Are you kidding me? Kofi freaking Kingston?
Yeah.
Now they're just throwing a match together to entertain us, regardless of the possibility
the
of any of these guys winning. You know, but we'll break that down in a second.
Cool.
Ben, do you agree with us? Do you think? Are you feeling like your stomach gets that unsettled feeling? Like, are they really ready for whatever they're gonna do?
Yeah, I'm with both of you guys. I think, for all the criticism they've drawn probably in the last couple of years of booking on the fly to an extent where they're booking month to month or 2 months out, and we've always been like, oh, I wish I'd get back to the days of long-term booking, I think they really did give it a shot. I think they had WrestleMania through SummerSlam, if not in pen, then definitely in pencil, like you said, Scott. And they had a really long-term plan, and it hinged around one guy, and him getting hurt has completely thrown off. And I think not only are they panicking, but I think they're also kind of still looking out the side of their eye to see, well, is he going to be back this week? So I think they're afraid to make a new long-term plan. So it's not just that one fell apart. It's that until they know for sure when Daniel Bryan's going to be back, they don't want to say, all right, well, you know what? Daniel Bryan's out of the picture. Here's our direction now. They're not committing to a new direction. Instead, it's just, well, let's just keep the plate spinning until Daniel Bryan's healthy again.
Yeah. JD?
Oh, you already asked me, buddy.
Oh, I asked you. Willie. Sorry.
It's a little unsettling. It's, and in a way, kind of exciting, too. Money in the Bank's one of my favorite pay-per-views. So to have all this up in the air could make for a really exciting show where it's not predictable. So just kind of looking at it from a different standpoint. We'll talk, obviously, about the second Money in the Bank match later, but there did seem to be a lot of names thrown in there, but I'd also be interested in hearing who could have gone in there and who should have gone in there instead.
Well, I've got a theory there, but I'll wait.
Okay. Reesh, what do you think?
Like everybody was saying, and I agree, is that I don't want to be Chicken Little, you know, like a lot of people are about the sky is falling with the WWE booking lately, but it does feel like, you know, they had the stabilizing force that they wanted to carry with them all the way to the fall with Daniel Bryan as the champion, and when he went down, they were trying to, like, just temporarily build this bridge that could get them all the way to SummerSlam, and it just feels like they're on shaky ground right now because they don't really know what they want to do. It's just typical Vince where they don't know – Vince doesn't know, you know, from day in and day out exactly what direction he wants to go in all the time, and I don't think the writers do either, or Triple H knows. So they're just trying to figure out one booking decision, and then they kind of go 180, and then they do another booking decision, and then they have all this free time to waste, and so they fill it up with stupid crap like – Stephanie puking on people and then mud baths and, you know, filler with Rusev and that really doesn't go anywhere. So it just feels like you're right. Everybody's right that, you know, they don't really have direction right now, and that's why I think everybody's really confused and feel a little bit strange about what's going on. I think another problem is that, unlike other years, there is a pay-per-view in between Money in the Bank and SummerSlam, and that's Battleground. And I feel like they don't want to give away what they're going to do for SummerSlam leading into Money in the Bank. I think they want to save it up a little bit longer until they're finished with Battleground in July and then go through to SummerSlam. And I think that's hurting the show a little bit. I think what's saving the show is, like Steve saying, Money in the Bank, because of the ladder matches and the fact that it has good history on it, on the card itself, you're probably guaranteed to get at least two really good matches. But I do agree with you. The direction of the company storyline-wise right now is not in a good favor.
I don't think the sky's falling. Yeah, I wouldn't say the sky's falling, but I mean, they're in a bit of a pickle. Yeah.
And kind of a weird, like, silver lining. How batshit insane is it that after all the time we spent saying they'll never give Daniel Bryan a chance, he'll never be the guy, literally the whole company is now imploded around him?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, how ironic is that?
But I will not give up on Rusev. I will not. I don't care.
Let me
rip,
ask this.
Everybody can rip all the vignettes they want. I love Rusev. I love that whole gimmick, and I love that whole thing.
I want to ask this side question, but we could get to this months later when he returns. But do you feel like there'll be even more investment in Bryan coming back and trying to win the title back?
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
It's just like Austin in 98 into 99. Same thing.
And Buff Bagwell when he came back, too.
Oh, that broken neck.
I'll go back to watching Big Brother, you dope. So was Buff Bagwell in the house? There's nothing else going on. Him and his mom.
He's in the Gigolo house.
Was she on a pole?
In the Gigolo house.
He's on a pole.
All right. Writing wise. The last 2 weeks we've seen that little 6-minute window or 7-minute window or what seems like a 3-hour window of Vince injecting himself. Last week it was the puking segment, which obviously harkens back to like a 98 Raw. This week it was I guess it was shit-scented pudding or whatever that was supposed to be.
Chocolate
in that
pudding.
Whatever the hell was supposed to be
it
in that pool.
It looked chocolate. It looked like caramel.
It looked like pudding, but she said it smelled, so whatever. In any event, you know, she had the cool Austin Powers, you know, go-go girl skirt on, Stephanie, but... And let's on a side note, very serious, let's mark out that Vicky came out to Eddie's music. That was pretty badass. Got to give her props for that. That was awesome. Although I would have liked the Heel 05 with the cell phone ringing at the beginning. That might be my favorite Eddie theme of all time. That the beat the shit out of Ray theme is what I pretty much call it. Because that's pretty much when he started. It was when he did those awesome – when he did the Three Amigos on the steel steps. That was tremendous. Triple H says he's looking for a flow to the show. That's what's causing issues with the network. I don't think that's the case. But these last 2 weeks of Raw, I feel like the matches aren't bad.
Matches are never bad,
Scott. It's the fill. The fill sucks. And it's too much. I don't think the matches have been bad at all. Even, I mean, you guys are going to think I'm crazy, and JD's probably going to hang up. Maybe I'll say it then. I thought Naomi and
Alicia Fox
was not bad. I think it was more hearing Naomi or Cameron whine kind of added to it, but it wasn't that bad. It wasn't bad. It was. I know I'm saying that a lot. Somebody else may not think it's bad. I didn't think it was as terrible a match as Pat as usual Diva matches are.
The one thing I like about Naomi is that you could tell that Naomi really wants to be a wrestler.
Yeah, you could tell that the Funkadactyl
Cameron
thing is just
or
a,
whatever the other girl's name is. Cameron. No. She's just a bitch.
Yeah, no, and I love the who did the frozen shot? Was that Greenhouse on the Facebook of Lawler checking out Paige's ass? And people are saying things like he's already past fifth grade. I think it's safe to say that the roster work rate wise is fantastic. I definitely will give you props for that, Rish, because you've been saying that a lot. The roster is great in terms of getting in the ring and eating up between 8 and 12 minutes.
The level of depth is unbelievable.
I could watch Barrett, and we'll talk about him in a minute. Because
I could watch NXT and never get bored.
Well, that too. But I love watching Barrett and Sheamus just pummel the shit out of each other. I love it.
You know, it's like we're in the opposite of the Attitude Era, where, you know, the Attitude Era, the stories carried the product so much and the matches usually just kind of sucked really bad.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's pretty much the total opposite. The matches are great, but then when we get to the stories and the backstage stuff, that's the chore now. So
and the backstage have just been getting awkward.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of them don't even make sense. Really, really bad. It's like watching paint dry. Really.
Whereas in 2002 and 2004, you had great stories and shitty stories and great matches and shitty matches. Whereas now, we have pretty much all good matches but bad storylines. Really blah kind of storyline.
Let me ask you this, Willie. Let me ask you this. Is there not enough Cena? Don't you feel like he's never on?
I can't believe that question was just asked.
I know. That's why. I mean, I feel like I'm reaching for straws here.
On an episode where we already discussed TNA for 20 minutes.
Yeah, we're going to talk about the saving grace of John
Cena. The lack of John Cena.
Well, he was on a bit on this Monday. It just wasn't until the end. He did that interview, which I may have fast-forwarded through, and the main event match, the 4-on-3 match. So he was there. I got caught up in the flow pun with all the pudding and the puke and the cat litter, which I'm going to write about tomorrow. I don't want to spoil it too much, but that has become worrisome. Like, they're laying on that crutch of the objectification of women stuff, dumping stuff on everyone's head, and that's been kind of...
That's Vince.
Yeah, that's totally Vince. Vince. Either that or someone has some problems.
They have food poisoning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, finish your point, release. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, it's a chore. It's completely a chore to watch, and it's, from my standpoint, from the last few weeks where I've been watching so much wrestling outside of WWE, it makes it even more of a chore to go through to the backstage stuff. I thought overall the flow of the last couple weeks was good. It's just that kind of filler that is easily fast-forwarded through.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I was watching the last couple days at work. I can listen to the network in the background while I'm on another terminal. And last couple days, I've been listening to the 88 Great American Bash. I've been trying to go through all the NWA shows. And today was, I think, Clash 3. And I was listening. It was JR and Caudle, and they were doing the match. The opener of Bash 3, Clash 3, I'm sorry, is Mike Rotunda defending the TV title against Brad Armstrong. It was a 20-minute draw because they always did draws for the TV title. And I'm like, wow, this is exciting. I really think we need – if you're going to have a three-hour show, we need like some – I think we need a match with some teeth. I think they need to do like at least one pay-per-view-length match a week. Instead of having like seven matches that are between 5 and 11 minutes, let's have four matches and two of them be like – or let's have five matches and maybe two of them be like 17 or 18 minutes. Do you think maybe more wrestling will help fill this block? Ben, what do you think?
I'm not sure, Scott, because I think, like everyone's been saying, the wrestling's not the problem. And I think we are getting at least one decent, like, 15-minute match a week. Like, this week it was Barrett and Ziggler. I think you put too much wrestling out there, you run the risk of just going in the other direction. But it's tempting because, like you said, that's what's working for them right now and has been for the last several years.
Mm.
Whereas the storylines just aren't clicking. But I think if they did do that, to be completely transparent, I think we'd probably be complaining that there wasn't enough storyline stuff. I think they need to find that medium. They need to get back to where they were even pre-WrestleMania, where we were all really
January
invested. Yeah, we're really invested in the Daniel Bryan stuff. We're invested in the Shield Wyatt stuff. Those segments, those non-wrestling segments, which were only a few months ago, were really good. I think going full circle, it really does come back to they're spinning their wheels while they're waiting for their main event babyface to come back.
That's what the thing is.
Yeah. That's a great point.
I think I'm gonna piggyback that, Ben, because thinking about it, the babyfaces on this roster right now are guys really nobody cares about. Who cares about Sheamus right now? Who cares about? Yeah. I mean, you can tell.
I can name one exception.
Roman Reigns.
Roman Reigns.
Yeah, but he's not ready. I don't want him winning on Sunday. I don't want him winning. No, he cannot win Sunday. He cannot win Sunday.
I don't think he should win Sunday. I agree with that.
But they are. But I will say that. I mean, I think Triple H, who obviously is invested in Reigns, that's one of his guys. I think he's accelerating the process because of this chasm on the babyface side. Is there anybody else you could think about turning face?
But I think, Scott, you're illustrating again the point is that they thought, okay, if we have Daniel Bryan here for X amount of months or years, we can take our time with Roman Reigns.
Right.
And now that they don't have Daniel Bryan, it's like, oh, holy crap, do we got to speed up with Roman Reigns? Do we have to turn Cesaro? Do we have to do this? It, like, really was one domino knocking everything over. And it's also, you know, I think like you said, we haven't seen Cena as much because I think they're hesitant to put Cena back in his usual place because they really were, unbelievably enough, committed to letting Daniel Bryan run on top as the top babyface and letting right. Cena cool his heels for a little bit. So again, it gets back to what I was saying, where if they knew flat out Daniel Bryan's going to be out for 6 months, we have 6 months to fill, guys, I think they probably say, all right, you know what? Just put Cena on top. We'll run it out. We'll get back to what we were going to do. But because I think it's so day-to-day, they don't want to do that because if they go through the trouble of putting Cena back on top, then they have to put Bryan over Cena. It's this whole clusterfuck because mm-hmm. they don't know when Daniel Bryan is coming back. I think the best thing for any of them right now is, okay, this is a hard date when Daniel Bryan's coming back. No more of this. He may be back in a month, but he may be back in 3 months, but he may be back in 6 months. They need to know definitively, and then they need to build out from there.
Yeah, and Scott, the thing is, like, with Daniel Bryan, if you're on a roster that's really a lot more depleted than that, and Bryan goes down, this would be a really terrible gaping hole that everybody would see. The talent is there. They got guys there. Now, are they ready? No, probably not a lot of them are ready, and that's the problem. They don't have a game plan. They don't know who they want to elevate. They don't want to know who's guy number one, who's guy number two, who's your mid-card star guy. They don't know that stuff. It's like when you have an emergency, well, call the cops, call the fire department, call the medic, call the Air Force. Well, you don't need to call all of them. You just need help with one from one in one section. You just need one guy that wants to be the man. Is John Cena like a good like interim guy? Well, that's fine. Or do you want Roman Reigns to elevate a little bit earlier than expected? Or do you want Bray Wyatt to do it?
But that's the other problem, Andrew, is that if they had, like we were saying, they had this long-term plan for Bryan, say they have another long-term plan for Reigns, I think they're saying, well, we don't want to fuck up our plan for WrestleMania next year. You know, maybe Reigns is the plan for WrestleMania. So now it's suddenly like, well, we already screwed up our summer. Now we're going to elevate this guy quicker than the end. Then we don't have a winter storyline. It's a snowball.
Yeah, you quicken the lifespan of one of your other storylines for the sake of sacrificing it. Yeah.
And you think they might be hesitant to just go back to business as usual with Cena due to the responses that they were getting from Royal Rumble to WrestleMania?
Could be.
Like, oh, if we go back to
those live crowds were getting brutal.
Yeah. It wasn't just pay per views.
My honest opinion, Steve, is that I don't think they have much of a choice. I think they're in a position where they're going to have to give it to Cena.
I think roster-wise, at the moment, in terms of igniting a babyface reaction, and I know, Ben, you had said this on the last show that – I think it was you, Ben – that they shouldn't make a complete switch. But in terms of fan reaction, I still think the wild card's Bray Wyatt.
Yeah.
Fans are still – but you had said not to turn him full-blown face. Yeah. Now
– I stand by that.
And I agree.
Me too.
And I agree, but I don't think you need to. I think it's a separation of – because if you notice, they're definitely putting the spotlight in terms of heels on Harper and Rowan now. They have their own music. And notice nobody – like somebody said
– awesome music, by the way.
Yes, I love it. But somebody said – I forgot which thread it was. One of the threads on Facebook. Somebody said – it's weird. I didn't notice – it might have been Justin that said it. Nobody was singing the song.
That was me, I think.
Was that you? That was you that said it. Yeah. You know why? Because nobody cares about them. It's about Bray.
Oh,
it's him.
It's just because they didn't recognize the tune at first.
I thought it was pretty recognizable.
I liked how Harper and Rowan stared at those titles and that tease. It was like monkeys playing with fire.
Yeah, it was pretty. Yeah.
Like, what are these?
It's like 2001: A Space Odyssey, where they're throwing the bones everywhere. Yeah, it was. But I think Bray is the key. Now, again, Ben, I agree. You shouldn't turn him like, you know, John Cena babyface, and all of a sudden Bray Wyatt's wearing glow in the dark T-shirts. I'm not saying that, but I do think you need to. The problem here, I think the ultimate issue here is you need to have an expert writer. You know who they need right now? Chris Kresge. That's who they need.
Yep.
Because they need a guy who can be very subtle. What's that?
They need their storyboards.
Yeah, they need their storyboards. They need a damn good storyboard right
they
now.
They need a head writer, Scott. Oh, wait. He's
well, that too. But they need a guy who's going to subtly make you really cheer Bray without realizing you're really cheering Bray. Like another guy who used to wear jean shorts, drank beer, had a goatee, etc., etc. Didn't change him any, and he became the greatest guy in the history of the business.
You know what they need,
That's
Scott?
What it comes down to.
You know what they need? They need Vince Russo back.
Oh, so that we can get 20-minute puking segments? No. This is a guy who said to Vince McMahon in 1999, why don't we just ditch the ring and just do 2 hours of skits?
He got the ratings points up a full decimal, Scott.
Yes, but the problem there was he had a filter, and that filter is now 15 years older. And he's lost his filter. So that's the difference.
And fuck you, Vince Russo, for copying us.
Yeah. Is he still with... No. I think he's back with TNA. Maybe that's why I stopped watching. Anyway, so you get so
what
the,
is happening right now?
I have no idea. We've totally fallen off the rails here. Let's get back to Bray because this is a key thing, and then we'll go to break and talk about the matches. I agree with you guys that you don't want to turn him full blown face and suddenly he's like giggly, you know, Cena promos. That's not going to happen. We know that. But there needs to be some kind of writer, a good one, that can start to subtly make him not sound as cynical as he is. He's cynical. That's what his gimmick is. He's a cynic.
I think the key to Bray Wyatt is that you don't need a writer for that. From what I understand, most of Bray's character comes from Bray Wyatt. And he's a smart enough, savvy guy, and also has enough ties to the business. Like let's keep in mind who his family is, that I think he can turn himself when he's ready.
Keep in mind that his brother is pathetic. Oh, wait, sorry, what?
That's where I wanted
disagree.
To go.
Disagree.
You know what the best, entirely. You know what the best way to do it is? Have it revealed that Bray Wyatt worships Bo. And Bo makes Bray
Wyatt... Bray Wyatt's a believer? I'd put a bullet in my mouth
that
if that happened.
That would be brilliant.
I swear to God, I'd blow the back of my skull open if I had to hear that. Yeah. You guys are not going to convert me on Bo Dallas. We'll have to talk about that
but
another day.
I will say this. When Bo said that to Titus O'Neil, when he said... I think he said something like, hey, little buddy. And
the best thing was... Titus swats the mic out of his hand and goes, oh, silly me, Mr.
Butterfingers.
I got to admit, I laughed my ass off.
Okay, all right.
Dude, that was awesome.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back here on PTBN's main event, great discussion, guys, so far. It's been a little epileptic, but it's been fun, as always. When we come back, we'll finally break down the matches for Money in the Bank. As I believe it was Jordan mentioned, we have four, two of them ladder matches. We have a tag title match, and we have a Divas Championship match. I don't think anything else has been added, which means are those two matches going to be like an hour? We'll see. PTBN's main event, Money in the Bank predictions, coming up.
On a poll.
Shut up.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out The Kevin Kelly Show each and every week, placetobenation.com. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today, plus be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture, whatever's on your mind, too. We'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here, placetobenation.com.
Let me know you in the house.
This is the king of old school, Steve Corino, and you've heard all the rumors, and it's true. The Steve Corino Show is here. We talk about wrestling. We talk about baseball, movies, television, anything you want to talk about. New guest every week. That's right. The Steve Corino Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
Hey, this is Bauer from The Bauer Show, sports and more. You can check out The Bauer Show podcast every Wednesday and Friday right here at placetobenation.com.
The Bauer Show.
Chad, do you hate it when commercials run and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on placetobenation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Hey, this is Rob Naylor. Do you still enjoy pro wrestling? Believe it or not, I still do. So you better join myself and Will on the Google Wrestling Podcast exclusively at placetobenation.com.
Shit, I wasn't ready. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and... Shit. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling, follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on Place to Be Nation.
So you've got the script, yeah? You've all got it?
Yeah.
Oh, this sounds terrible. The Titans of Wrestling... Oh, brilliant. Sorry. The Titans of Wrestling are...
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for a show and breakdown matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover. Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Pop. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of Wrestling.
You know you want to hear it.
What's going on? This is the Godfather, Nate Milton, with an offer you cannot refuse. Each and every week you can join Marcus Vandenberg, Big Nasty Alfred Kunawa, and myself on the Kings of Sport podcast, available exclusively on placetobenation.com, your one-stop spot for the best in sports and pop culture.
I'm Scott Criscolo, and your new home for sports is Place to Be Nation's Extra Point. Join me and the doctor, Giorgio Bellino, for your sports hookup, whether it's NFL, Major League Baseball, NBA, colleges, or the Cowboys MMA Blitz.
Forget about it. Plus, join me for my prescription where I will solve all the world's sports problems with my own brand of medicine.
That's Place to Be Nation's Extra Point here on PlaceToBeNation.com.
In Rhode Island and looking for great food and a fun atmosphere, we'll be sure to stop by Bonehead's Wing Bar, 131 Washington Street in West Warwick, with over 65 different wing sauces and dozens of sandwiches, burgers, and appetizers. In a fully stocked bar, Bonehead's has something for everyone. Bonehead's also shows every WWE and UFC pay-per-view, features live music, weekly trivia, and much, much more. So be sure to stop in, tell Matt and the crew that Place to Be Nation sent you, and become a Bonehead today.
What's up, wrestling fans? This is Jeff Peck, and you can check out my wrestling podcast, The Still Real to Us Show, every Saturday right here at placetobenation.com. It is a wrestling podcast from a fan's perspective, and we're not doing it in our mom's basement. So check it out every Saturday right here at placetobenation.com.
It's still real to me, damn it!
Looking for new wrestling, sports, and pop culture voices? Head over to placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. We have an extremely talented staff that covers comics, video games, and all facets of entertainment. Our sports coverage spans all the major professional and collegiate sports, including MMA. Our fresh takes on professional wrestling are some of the best on the internet. Don't forget to check out our fantastic podcasts as well, including the voice of Ring of Honor, Kevin Kelly, exclusively at PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Also, be sure to check out our friends at thehistoryofwwe.com, ProWrestlingOnly.com, Scott Keith blog at RSPWFAQ.net, and PileDriverWrestling.net.
Welcome back, Place to Be Nation, to episode number 12 of PTBN's main event. I am Scott Criscolo, the Core Four with us, Ben Morse, Andrew Reich, Jordan Duncan, Steve Willey. All right, let's get down to the fun games. And the fun games is Money in the Bank, the picks. And we only have four matches. Normally I split it up two and two, but since there's only four matches, I'll let it give everybody a chance to comment tonight since there's only four matches to talk about. All right, let's start with the two easy ones. The Divas Championship on the line. Paige, who I love, and I think she's getting unfairly treated, taking on Naomi, who, as we've said, really wants to, you know, this was the girl on the women's NXT everybody made fun of that actually busted her ass. And
she busted it all right.
She busted it all right. And now here she is with a Divas title shot. Ben, since you're the Diva.
Yeah, the Divas expert.
Are you watching it now? Are you watching? Or does it start tomorrow night?
No, it's tomorrow. Oh. I'm like Lee Marshall on Nitro. They bring him out just for the women's matches.
Yes.
She has to wait. Legacy. Yeah. Ben has to wait till the wife's asleep to watch the Divas.
No, she watches it with me. It's the only time she'll watch wrestling.
Does this mean we're going to have to redo all of your guys' columns?
That's what I told Brad. I said re-release them, man.
Re-release all the columns. Again. All right. What are your thoughts on this one?
I think it's a good match. I think it's a make or break match for Paige. I think they're putting her in with someone who can actually work. And Naomi, I think they're actually giving her a storyline. Personally, I like Paige too, Scott. I think she needs to turn heel. I don't think she's working as a babyface. I think she's aggressive in the ring. She can be a great bitch. She showed it on NXT. I think they pushed her a little too fast as a babyface. So I wouldn't mind a heel turn. Regardless, I think she keeps bringing it in the ring. I'd like to see her get a little more offense. I think that's a problem too, is they're squashing her a little bit too much. But I think this could be a really good match. It's babyface versus babyface, so that means it's not going to be a one-sided beatdown. I think Paige retains the title. I think Naomi's going to be consumed with, you know, they're doing something with a split in the Funkadactyls, getting rid of the dead weight there. I think she'll be back as a serious contender down the line. She'll be champion at some point, but not yet.
Reesh.
Yeah, I think in terms of a pick, I think Paige will retain. There's really no reason for her to drop the belt yet. I don't want to give up on Paige as a babyface yet. I think that she can work as an edgy babyface. I don't think it's something where they're hitting a dead end. They have to change anything in a big hurry. The thing about Paige is that, you know, she had the match with Tamina. That was not good. And then the one with Alicia Fox, which was going places every now and then, but it really wasn't a good overall Divas match. I'd call it maybe, like, just average. She needs that one real standout match. I mean, I don't even think AJ Lee really had a standout great match, but she had maybe one or two where you're like, oh, okay, AJ Lee's really starting to figure out how to be a wrestler. I can dig this girl. And with Paige, I don't think she's had that one match where she's really shown what she can do in one setting. And I think Naomi might be able to do that with her. You know, she's got good dexterity. She can move. She's smooth. I think she can do a few things that Alicia Fox wasn't able to do talent-wise, and definitely what Tamina couldn't do. So I think they'll have – this might be the best match Paige has had among the pay-per-view matches he's had, but I think she'll retain, and I think she'll probably stay in the same position she's been in.
Wow, that sounded like a Cameron promo. That's how mangled that was, Reesh. Have another cookie. JD.
Ugh. Man, I don't know or care that much.
Would you just roll with it?
I skip most of the Divas stuff. The NXT Divas are so much better than the stuff we get on the main roster. I think, you know, to the point where a lot of these chicks who've been around for so long, like Alicia Fox, a lot of people were saying how great she got and all that stuff. To me, she's the same. I mean, she's Alicia Fox. She's been around for like 4 years. You know, Cameron and Naomi are old news. I say just scrap all these women who've been around for more than 18 months, 2 years, and just bring in a whole fresh new batch. Bring up all the NXT girls, you know? I mean, that hurts your NXT product, but it's hard for me to get interested is a problem I'll have with one of the ladder matches that I'll talk about in a minute. It's just nothing new to me, you know? Paige is fine, you know? And I think I'm with – was it Ben that said she needs to turn heel? I agree there. But when she's up against Alicia Fox or Rosa Mendez coming up, the female Shield,
oh,
you know,
Jesus.
That took out Vicky on Monday.
Yeah, what was that?
You know, those are just people that I don't want to see anymore. And, I hear, oh, they've improved and all this stuff. I don't care. Maybe that's cynical of me, but I just don't care. You know, Paige will win. There's my prediction.
Yeah. Willie? Well, I did hear – from a source that Paige is moving to Stamford, Connecticut.
What?
She said
someone called on it.
Yep, she's going to move to Stamford just for you, Scott. Paige is going to win. I don't know what's modified about her lock still. And I do like Naomi. Part of all out of all of her competitors that she's gone against, Naomi is going to be the best one. I don't think the AJ match counts. And I think Naomi is also one who has improved. If I were to go along with Jordan and dump everyone, which I think is a good idea, I would probably just keep Naomi, Paige, and Alicia Fox because she's shown a little bit of crazy. I think she's improved. I don't think she's great by any sense of the imagination. I don't think she's even as good as Charlotte down in NXT. But she's shown improvement. Naomi is so much better than Cameron, even just with the kind of the facial mannerisms and stuff, like when she was shaking Paige's hand and the little kind of smirk she got afterwards, like, yeah, I'm going to get that title shot at the pay-per-view.
Mm.
It was just little stuff like that I think
she's
learning better with.
Yeah, she's definitely learning. I think Cameron's on cruise control.
She's picking up the ticks, you know?
Yeah,
she's
and the
picking
Cameron
up the things. You know what it is? When the template, let's be honest, the template for the It is Sean. Sean always had the little things that no one else, that not many others do. And, I mean, and I'm prefacing this by saying I'm not comparing Naomi to Sean. Sure. What I'm saying is if you can gain those little things that aren't taught, then you actually have an idea what to do in this business.
The intangibles.
Yeah, and I think Naomi slowly, from a Divas perspective, is getting there.
Yeah.
So there we go. All right, so sweep for what?
Yeah, my favorite part of the Cameron mm-hmm. talking was not Michael Cole trying to bully her, which was, you know, considering someone who is not the best announcer at this point, it's ironic that he was doing it. But
yeah.
she said she was going to slap the taste out of Paige's mouth, and Paige is like, yeah, whatever. And then two lines later repeats the same threat that Paige just completely brushed aside.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, well, how about I slap
the taste out of him? That whole – I feel like those – it's another example of – and we talked about it on the last show, how abysmal those three guys are. And I almost feel like they're on cruise control too. Like, they don't even care who's at the table. Oh, yeah. Like, they're just going through it. And as long as you hard sell the network, no one cares about the other 2 hours and 56 minutes of what the hell you're supposed to be doing. That's what I feel like sometimes.
It's almost like they're laughing at each other.
Yeah, like, guys, we really
they're
suck.
They're not servicing.
You know those guys on Main Event think we stink? Yeah, we are. You know? King, stop looking at her fourth grade ass. All right. The other non-ladder match, the tag team championships are on the line. Your champs, Jay and Jimmy, the Usos, taking on Rowan and Harper. I'm kind of 50-50 on this. I'll start with you, Willie. I'm not quite sure here. It seems like a foregone conclusion that it's time to switch the belts to Rowan and Harper. They've earned it. I have a feeling it's not going to happen, though. What do you think?
I think it's going to happen. That's who I'm leaning to, and I didn't expect you to say that either. You're really surprising me tonight, Scott. I think it's going to happen. They got the new music. They are. I think Luke Harper is so over right now. I'm still not really sold on Rowan yet, besides the sheet mask. But I think they deserve it. If it were me running the show, I would give it to them and then have Bray win the whole thing and then build your whole next couple months until Brian comes back around the Wyatt family running things in the organization. But that likely won't happen.
Okay.
But I think Harper and Rowan would be a good pick to win here.
Okay. JD?
Yeah, just so I don't seem like a negative Nelly, the opposite of the Diva stuff, I think this match is going to be awesome. I'm so looking forward to this match. Luke Harper
You just seem like a misogynist.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
God, love throwing the guilt out, Morse. Good God.
Luke Harper's one of my top five guys right now. He's so good, like Steve said. And he's good at everything. It's, you know, some guys, they're good at, you know, having the matches, but even just his facial, his mannerisms, everything he does is awesome. I think what's tricky with the Usos is they've been champs for a while now, but it doesn't seem like they've had that defining win. You know, they haven't really had a feud. They haven't really – I mean, they beat Rybacksel a million times, but they – you know, leading up to their title win, they were having awesome matches, and they had some really good stuff going. And then since they've won, they haven't really done a whole lot. So it feels like they just got it, but they've had it for a while now. But I think you got to give it to Rowan and Harper. I think they're the hot team, and – I think maybe the Usos are better at chasing the titles too, I would totally give it to Rowan and Harper, and I think they're going to win. I think it's going to be a really good match too. I hope, since they've only got four matches announced, I think they give this one a lot of time. I would love it if they go 20, 25 minutes even. I think it'll be really good.
I think it's going to be a fantastic match too. Rish.
I think JD's having trouble finding a defining moment for the Usos because their defining moment was not even a match that they were officially in. That was the Payback Last Man Standing match.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You got a little tease of what
they took out Rowan and Harper. Yeah,
where they basically had a mini match, you know, to kind of fill in the time between for recovery for Bray and Cena before they got into the rest of their spots, and they really just ripped it with some crazy violent stuff with tables and all that stuff. And like everybody's saying, they're capable of having a great tag team match. I got a feeling that this one, they might hold back a little bit. I don't think it's going to be one where they're going to try to tear the house down. They might do that on Raw. Maybe
because there's going to be bigger stuff in the other matches. Yeah.
Exactly. They don't want to steal the thunder of the two ladder matches because those are going to be spot-tastic in their own ways. And I don't see a title change here. I think that the Usos will either defend or there might be disqualification where there's plunder involved and it turns into a brawl. Mm-hmm. I don't see a title change here. I think they're capable of having a great match. I just don't think it's going to happen at the pay-per-view.
Okay. Ben?
Sleeper match of the night. Going to be really good. Four guys who can go. Even Rowan, I think, is skilled. I want to talk about the Usos for a sec in that I think we downplay how special the Usos are in the sense that stretching back, really going back to, like, I'm thinking like 80s NWA, WWF. When was the last time we had a bona fide box office babyface tag team who is in no danger of splitting up These guys are purely a tag team.
Oh, yeah.
This is not a team Hell No. This is not a New Age Outlaws. These guys start as a tag team. They're going to go as a tag team. Mm-hmm. And they're long term. Mm-hmm. And they're this is the type of – if it was 1988, they would be headlining the B-House shows. Yeah. They're over.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Well, they kind of watch SmackDown?
Yeah.
That's the
it's
point.
It's true. They're the John Cena of the tag division, and mm-hmm. that's really cool. To that end, I think they need to be booked because they're going to be the cornerstones of this tag division for some time to come because they're young. They need to be booked like an NWA-style babyface, and that means every so often you got to have the monster heels come along and take the titles because they're better. Babyface has got to be chasing. They can't have title reigns for too long. I think it gets uninteresting. I see them dropping the belts here, and they will get them back in a few months. I think they're going to do that a lot. I see them as being like they're like the Rock and Roll Express.
I was about to say Rock and Roll Express. Yeah, that's a good comparison.
They're the Rock and Roll Express. They're gonna always be in the mix, and they're gonna keep getting the titles back, but they need to drop them every now and again so we can see them chasing them. It's weirdly enough, I was thinking they're kind of like Trish Stratus, where you knew she was always going to get the women's title back when she was a babyface, but she had to drop it every few months to Molly Holly, to Victoria, to Jazz, so you could get that chase. And that's how I see the Usos.
The Hardy Boys were the same way. They were always better off chasing the titles, and when they won it, you could wait for them to drop it so that they could chase them again.
Hell, but Steve Austin was better chasing than he was when he had it, too, you know?
Yeah, that's you guys are giving all the best examples, because I think like they're a true babyface team with staying power. It's not like they're going to break up and, you know, one's going to go heel anytime soon. So I think they drop here, and I think their summer program is going to be them chasing the Wyatts to get them back. And they'll have them back by the fall. I don't think they're going to go without them too long. Yeah, maybe SummerSlam.
Okay. That's so, good. I like that thinking. Sadly, I have no confidence. I think the Usos win.
let me say something about that, Sue Scott. I think the Usos can lose anytime you want them to. Because like Ben said, they're the cornerstone. They could lose and still be fine. Rowan and Harper, I mean, I don't think they're in danger yet. But you look at their track record, they may need to win here. You go back a couple months where they were just kind of like almost like the Three Stooges in the cage match against Cena. You know, exactly. And they just looked bad. And then the next show, the Usos took them out and made them ineffective. Now, they've looked good in the singles matches against the Usos, but they may need to win here, whereas the Usos don't need to win anything. They can lose and be just fine. And I think Rowan and Harper may need to win this match. One last thing about the Usos. A couple weeks ago, and maybe I'm the only one who remembers it, they gave them a backstage interview, and they hardly ever get to talk. Did you guys see this?
Yep.
Yeah, I know. I remember.
I don't know what it was, but they just seem so natural. Like, a lot of the problems with the current roster is a lot of the characters just seem very fake and forced, and these guys seem like natural guys playing who they are. They almost seem like the PG version of the Briscoes to me, you know, and how they talked and how they acted. And I think if they start letting these guys talk a little bit more, I think it's going to help make them even bigger than what they are. I think they need to give these guys the microphone a little bit.
JD, you're going to kill me, but I think a big part of why they're able to do that is they're both on Total Divas, and they get to show off. They get to show off their personalities there.
Aren't they assholes on Total Divas?
No, they're like...
Aren't like all the guys on Total Divas assholes?
Not at all. The guys get to come off.
The one that's married to Naomi is like, he comes off as a really, really cool guy.
Yeah, they just, both Usos, because Jay's barely on, but Jimmy especially, they just come off as like cool, basically exactly how they were in that promo.
Right, that's a good point, Ben.
How
I don't
they came
just,
off. They just seem very natural.
I don't discredit that. That's a good point.
I think they're getting them comfortable on camera there, and now they're just like, all right, we can go out and do this. So.
But I think that goes back to our original discussion in this first segment about the fluff segments of the show, because everybody just seems so awkward. But JD, that's a tremendous point. That one promo they had, they seem very comfy being the guys everybody likes.
It comes back down to what Mick Foley was told during the Attitude Era to get your character over. Be yourself.
Yep.
Be an extension of yourself.
Yep.
That's what the Usos are doing.
Yeah, I agree.
Hard to be yourself when you're reading a promo from memory.
Right.
Yeah,
and this one didn't seem like that.
Yeah, I'm just very cynical about the booking right now. I feel like
they don't have a head writer, that they don't have time to write promos for everything, and people are kind of shooting from the hip.
Right. All right. So clean sweep for you guys, for Rowan and Harper, I just don't have.
Reach said he doesn't think.
I think the Usos will.
Keep oh, you agree with me? I do too. I don't discredit you guys. I wish if you guys were booking, I'd take them in a heartbeat. I just have no faith in it right now. I just it just makes no sense. It makes perfect sense, which is why they won't do it. I like the Usos. I like the Usos to keep it. And I have a feeling Rowan and Harper are going to win the titles on a Raw. I don't see them doing it on a paper.
Yeah, I think they're going to have one of those incredible matches, like 2 or 3 segment matches on Raw where
they'll take the titles.
The belt. Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right, let's delve into the first of 2 ladder matches. This one for the briefcase, which is now gold, since there's no red and green, red and blue. There is a gold briefcase, which I think is pretty sweet. All right, so typical, traditional Money in the Bank ladder match for the for a year. You can cash it in for the World Heavyweight Championship shot, WWE World Heavyweight Championship shot. Too many words. All right, your participants: Bad News Barrett, for now, Dean Ambrose, Dolph Ziggler, Jack Swagger, Kofi Kingston, Rob Van Dam, and Seth Rollins. My personal opinion, the only two guys that...
You know, Scott, on the website, mm-hmm. they've got Ambrose in the picture now. Like, when it shows the competitors, they've got Ambrose pictured in there.
Yeah, I said Ambrose.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I did say Ambrose.
Yep. Sorry, I didn't hear that.
No, I did say Ambrose. And they confirmed it on Raw, because remember Triple H told Rollins it's on you?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's confirmed. Okay. Yep.
I just didn't hear you say him.
Yep.
Don't try schmocking him.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I envision. No.
I'll give you a schmock down.
I think we just came up with the main event word of the night.
Schmockdown.
Wednesday night schmockdown. Okay. All right. The only two guys that I think right now can get the briefcase and not wreck themselves is Dolph and Barrett. I think they were planning on Barrett till, and we can do break this. We don't break storyline spoilers. We just break injury spoilers. That we'll do. And apparently, on Tuesday night's tapings, Bad News Barrett separated his shoulder once again. Jack Swagger, how's that bum still have a job?
Please cut that motherfucker.
Oh my God, that's two guys now, and he pretty much ended Dolph Ziggler's career. But I still think he's a guy that could win the briefcase. I really do.
Also got a title match at WrestleMania and got busted for pot.
Yeah, right before it. Yeah, it's just terrible. All right.
Also, he hates foreigners.
Well.
Wait, that's a good thing.
Yeah, some of us
and
do.
And the band Foreigner, too.
Okay. Well, no, that's a really bad
two
thing.
Bucks Hero. Okay. Benjamin, am I off base by saying that about Barrett and Dolph, the only two legitimate guys? I don't see Rollins or Ambrose winning the briefcase. What do you think of this match in general?
Yeah, I was kind of going with your line of thinking. That's kind of where I was tending. I thought a lot about those two guys. Barrett seemed like the obvious choice. Because what I see happening is I think the match is going to be focused around Rollins and Ambrose. Mm-hmm. They're clearly the stars. And I think it's going to be one of those situations where, you know, they're going to be in a struggle for the briefcase and someone's going to take advantage of them distracting each other. Mm-hmm. And it seemed like Barrett would be that guy. This is going to be the work rate match, obviously, of the ladder matches, I think. This is where all the guys who can actually have good ladder matches mm-hmm. are. You know, throwing – as much as Kofi is just like a joke, it's like, you know, he's got to be in there because he's going to hold the match together, which is a testament to him. The only I kind of had two trains of thought. Mm-hmm. One was the one I just described. The other was – does the briefcase become the focal point of a Rollins-Ambrose feud? And in that case, does Rollins end up with it eventually, but does Ambrose get it here? And they kind of do what we thought they were going to do with Sandow and Cody last year, where Ambrose has the briefcase, Rollins is chasing the briefcase, and I think Rollins gets it at some point in that scenario. But I don't know. I don't think Dolph gets it. Because I don't think they have any faith in him. If Dolph gets it, it's so they can have him cash in and lose, which I think is a waste of time. So, long story short, I'm terrible at predicting these matches. I would say if Barrett's healthy, Barrett is my pick. If Barrett's not healthy, I think there's a shot at Ambrose taking it. So I'm going to go with Barrett if he's healthy, Ambrose if he's out.
Okay. Reesh?
Ben, you brilliant bastard, because that's exactly what I was thinking about Rollins and Ambrose. And, you know, even before the shoulder injury, which is just really unfortunate for Barrett, this is like the second time he's gone into a big match that he's involved in and he got injured. The last time was in WrestleMania 28, right before when he broke his arm. But he might, I don't know if the word is out if he will be able to wrestle a match. If he does, he will be severely limited. He won't be able to actually do much with a ladder. And there's a lot of guys. The only thing about the match that I just don't like is that, and it's kind of counterintuitive because these are high-flying matches, is that all the wrestlers are kind of the same in style. You know, they're all kind of flippy, jumpy, do creative stuff with the ladder type of people, and sometimes that works, and then sometimes it can turn into a train wreck. And I don't know if this is a match that's going to be very well put together, very cohesive in terms of, like, style of booking. Like, I don't think it's going to make a great match in terms of just, like, the match itself, but I think you're going to see some really fun high spots, and I think you'll see just enough things to keep you interested. But I think, like Ben was saying, and I think that was exactly what they're going to do, it's good. The centerpiece of that match is Rollins and Ambrose, and I think Ambrose will win the briefcase and Rollins chases him, and it's going to be hilarious watching Ambrose with that white beater on running around with that briefcase. That'll awesome. Be funny for at least a few weeks, you know, running around, what they call him now, the lunatic. You know, just running around like a crazy person while Rollins is trying to win it back. But or they could go the other way and have the Chosen One, I guess you could call him, win the briefcase, and Ambrose is trying to make his life a living hell when he's trying to cash it in.
JD?
This match, to me, is a picture example of a lot of the problems with the company right now. I think it's reeks of playing it safe.
Hang on, can you hear me?
Yeah, what'd you do? Would a cotton belly come in the room?
He dropped my plate of cookies.
Yeah, and now you're scrounging on the floor like a dog.
But, you know, when I was watching Monday and I saw the first two faces I think they showed were Kofi Kingston and Jack Swagger, and it just seems to me like those guys are in every Money in the Bank match, doesn't it? You know?
Yes, I agree with you 100%, JD. I felt the same way.
You know, especially... Think of all the complaints people have about John Cena. He never changes. He's always a good guy. He's kind of just cheesy and all this stuff. Why does no one ever say that about Kofi Kingston?
You know, Kofi Kingston's only on once every 3 weeks.
Yeah, but I think he's one of the most stale guys they have on the roster. I think they really dropped the ball with this match, because I think this is a match that was thrown together last minute. I think what they should have done here is just put a bunch of new guys into this match. I think it should have been Rollins, Ambrose, Rusev, Bo Dallas,
Reigns,
Big E, Adam Rose, put him in there. Throw an NXT guy in there. Have an NXT match, have it be Tyson Kidd. And you know what people might say is, oh, they're untested and stuff like that. But here's the thing about the ladder match. It almost protects these untested guys, because you really can't have a bad one. You know, I think they missed a chance here by giving a lot of these guys a chance to kind of do something big. And even more than that, just follow the logic of it. You got Kofi, Dolph, Swagger, and RVD. How did they earn a shot at the briefcase? By winning a combined two matches in the past 5 months?
Yeah, pretty much.
You know, whereas you got Rusev, who hasn't lost, Bo Dallas, who hasn't lost, Adam Rose, who hasn't lost. I feel like they should have had those guys in this match and then do a rematch of Dolph and Wade Barrett as your filler. And I think you would have had a better show. But that's just my rant. I think they really missed the ball here, because I think what we're going to get is these guys, and then the filler matches is going to be Rusev beating Big E again and Bo beating a nobody.
And Stardust.
Yeah, it's Stardust, you know, right back.
Stardust is awesome.
He is. Yeah. I love him.
I will hear nothing bad
about
Stardust.
I'm fine with him, too. I'm just talking with the
guy. He looks like the gold version of the Zio Power Ranger.
When he was singing When You Wish It, wasn't that like that? That made the night for me when he was singing with that dusty lisp. When you with upon a star. It's tremendous.
Stardust is awesome, man.
Oh, he's awesome. That's a great face tag.
The movie Stardust is not awesome, but Stardust is awesome.
There was a movie called Stardust?
Yes, it sucks.
Did that have another one? Did that have Mariah Carey in it too?
is based on a book written by Neil Gaiman, which is not a bad book.
Honey 2 movie, Stardust? Oh.
But the movie has Robert De Niro as a space pirate, and it sucks.
Honey 2
Clarity, yeah, says my wife. We don't have time for any of your research.
Yeah, we're done. Okay.
All right, JD, keep going.
JD, any final thoughts?
Yeah, I think one of two things could happen. I think you could have a scenario where both you guys who went already are right. I think Rollins and Ambrose are going to be feuding over the briefcase. I think you'd have a scenario where the match ends where both of them have it in their hand and we kind of have an inconclusive finish. Or I could see, and I think this would be kind of cool, Rollins wins it and then Ambrose just steals it. He just takes it and runs away. I think that would be awesome. You know, I kind of got this weird vibe that Dolph had a shot at winning it. But I think I'll play it safe and just say that Rollins wins.
I like
that. I think Ambrose is going to be involved. Either they still fight over it. I would love to see Rollins win and celebrate, and Ambrose just snatches it and runs through the crowd like CM Punk did when he won the title at Money in the Bank a couple years ago. I think that'd be awesome.
Hmm. I like I just lost my train of thought. I'll get back to it. Willie, go ahead.
to kind of answer Jordan, I think the only thing that they were selling Swagger, RVD, and what was the other person you said?
Kofi?
Not Kofi, but they were all – oh, Dolph. They were all past Money in the Bank winners, and that's I think the only kayfabe reason why they kind of fit in there. I have no idea who's going to win this, and I kind of like that. You guys are convincing me about Ambrose. I was originally thinking Barrett or Dolph just because of the insertion of Ambrose into the mix. I thought for sure it was going to be Rollins at first, but I don't. Rollins seems too obvious. It doesn't seem like it would make sense for him to win.
That's my thought as well, yeah.
It would really hurt push, though.
How many times have we said, oh, that's too obvious? Well, that's what they do.
Well, I mean, they had Sandow win it, though. That was shocking.
I was going to say, Money in the Bank is the one place they usually don't go with the obvious.
Right. And, you know, what we had talked about in the first segment about, during the first half of the show, about, you know, working backwards with Daniel Bryan's injury, this gives them an easy storyline to, you know, change whenever they want to. They have a whole year to work with this Money in the Bank suitcase. So if you have a plan B or a plan C for next year in place, you can work backwards from there and then switch your Money in the Bank suitcase to whom you want it to be. Is it kind of a lazy thing? Yeah, but they might have to rely on that right now because of the uncertainty of Daniel Bryan. Mm-hmm. So they threw all these guys in there to put on the best possible match, which is smart because that main event, it's going to be a lot of storyline heavy stuff. He's got some guys in there who aren't your typical ladder match guys. Mm-hmm. So you need to have your little Kofi Kingston miracle spot here, too.
Well, Andrew made a good point earlier that usually when they have these ladder matches, they do a good mix of little guys who can fly around and do spots and big guys who can catch them. That's why you always saw, like, Kane and Mark Henry.
That's why I'm surprised Rusev didn't get put in there.
Yeah, him and Big E. It would have made sense, right? But then the opposite problem, and we'll get to the main event, obviously, next, is that there's no spot guys in the main event. It's all guys who would be great at catching smaller dudes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, Steve said they did this to make the best match, and I think they did it at the expense of the best card, though.
Oh, totally.
Because I think if you went with the newer guys in the match, then you could have that Dolph and Barrett. I mean, we saw them on Monday.
They were awesome.
I would rather have a bunch of untested guys in the ladder match with Dolph and Barrett on the undercard than this match with Rusev and Big E on the undercard.
Oh, can you imagine if they threw Neville in there?
Oh, yeah, that'd be awesome.
And he wouldn't have
Sami Zayn?
Yeah.
Right, or Tyson Kidd even, you know?
Too early. Or Mojo Rawley?
Oh, man.
Just an aneurysm?
The Vaughn villain?
Mojo Rawley does cause brain aneurysms.
Sounds like you just did the Bubba Ray from, like, 95. Burr.
It was an allergic reaction.
Is that what he says now? Velvet.
With Dolph Ziggler, I've always said, man, he just never had that match. He finally had it Monday against Barrett. Like, the one match where you're like, oh, man, that really rocked the house.
Yeah,
like,
no, it was awesome. It was awesome.
I'm going to watch it again, yeah.
Wouldn't it be funny if RVD won after Triple H kind of, you know, purposely half-buried him?
I have no problem with RVD winning. I don't see it happening, but
That is the Triple H burial tour, like he did to Edge, Jericho, and Rob Van Dam back in October. He just got to get his fucking little stab in on those guys.
He does.
I don't know what it is.
Yep. It's because he's great and you're not. All right, let's move on.
One last thing.
Yeah.
Sorry. I think the reason why I thought – now that we're talking about it, it reminded me. The reason why I thought Dolph was an outside shot is because – Monday night, Triple H basically guaranteed Rollins was going to win. Like, I'm going to get my way. And does that ever work out for the heel, you know, the heel boss to go out and guarantee who's going to win?
Sometimes.
Secondary match, yes.
There were times in 98, 99 where Vince got what he wanted. He won the Rumble.
I don't know. I just thought it
I'm not saying it's going to happen here, JD. I'm just saying it's not never happened.
Right.
But Vince is Vince. In your defense, Vince is Vince. It's a little different.
Sure.
You know, like Bischoff never always got what he wanted.
I definitely want Dolph to win. He's the guy.
So
who
do
I want to have.
Right?
I think the crowd would want him to win too.
I want Dolph to win too. I don't think it's gonna happen. I don't think I like your theory, Ben, about and all you guys. You guys seem to have backed it up about Rollins and Ambrose, but I just can't see them. You know, the World Heavyweight Championship title matches, you know, the contract is something they really need to be careful with. And the two of them dangling it around, I don't know if they're going to do that.
They don't need the briefcase for that feud.
I agree. That's another thing, too. I think that feud's going to happen anyway. You're exactly right, JD. I think the briefcase would just be gravy, and I don't think that's going to happen.
Unless it turns into a storyline where, because we're going to tease it later, that a babyface wins the title and the Authority's trying to win it back by using Rollins' briefcase.
I thought of that, too. But they do that in the same night, and that's just you just bury Rollins.
It doesn't always work. You're right.
You're not gonna bury Rollins in one night. That would be terrible.
I'm picking Dolph. I'll be the guy who picks him.
Okay. I think it'd be a great idea. Watch Swagger win. And then Swagger will go on the Break Everybody's Bones tour.
Kofi's gonna win and turn heel.
So Jordan, you picked Dolph and Ambrose. Dolph, Ambrose. Who else did you pick?
Rollins, and I think Barrett if he's healthy.
Okay. Damian Sandow.
And Marlon Fontaine, and those ice creams.
And how about this?
Ben-Sai's gonna come back.
And how Bob about, Seger.
How about RVD wins and becomes a Paul Heyman guy?
Nah.
He'd have to lose about 50 pounds to do that.
And he would overshadow Cesaro.
But he smokes a lot of weed, so it's possible.
Speaking of baked goods, what are you eating again, Willie? Reesh? All right. Anyway, let's get to the main event, which is your ladder match for the WWE World Heavyweight Championship. Alberto Del Rio, Bray Wyatt, Cesaro, John Cena, Kane, Randy, as Matt Rotella would say, Roman Reigns. And Sheamus. There have been a myriad of theories pertaining to this match. The most recent one is, of course, the leaked DirecTV poster or Wrestling DVD News Doc or whoever that poster came from, or Amazon or something. There was a poster of John Cena. I think it was Amazon.
There's rumors that it's fake.
I think it's Amazon. There's a poster of Cena and Brock, and it says SummerSlam. I don't buy that shit either. All right. Willie, I'll start with you.
Damn it.
Anybody but Roman Reigns? Is Roman Reigns just there to spear the world and then get hosed by, like, Rollins at the end of the night?
Yeah, you know, as much as I'm going to completely contradict myself here, and I think it's got to be Cena, even though I really think it should be Bray Wyatt. I think the safe bet is Cena to win the match. God, but Bray Wyatt would be so cool.
Yeah, it would be.
JD?
Gosh, there's a few different ways they could go. I could see Cena winning. I'd be okay with that. I'd love Bray Wyatt to win. I could even see them giving it back to Orton, believe it or not.
That's my pick.
Yeah, I thought about that, too.
That's my pick.
It does make sense.
And you know I think what, it's too? Going back to Orton.
The new Cena's turning heel to me is Sheamus' turning heel. I think every show lately has been like, this is perfect for Sheamus' turning heel.
I've been asking for that for months.
You know? I just think every match, every show lately has been a perfect opportunity for Sheamus, and this one would be too. So there's some good intrigue there.
But how would he turn heel in that match? Like, Jordan, I think you know about my frustration level with like Undertaker versus Sting or the Cena turning yeah. heel or those tropes.
Well,
like,
you just do a thing where, you know, all the guys are laid out, Reigns is climbing the briefcase, and Triple H comes out and just hits him with a sledgehammer or something and just steps to the side and lets Sheamus climb it, something like that, you know?
But okay. Sheamus turning heel is within the realm of possibility. Yeah. Cena turning heel even, is not.
You could even have Triple H in the ring and Orton in the ring and with Reigns, and Sheamus goes to bro kick Reigns, but he kicks the other – or goes to bro kick Orton, but he kicks Reigns, you know, and lets Orton win and he's his muscle. I don't know.
That'd be cool having Sheamus walk around with his little derby hat on or whatever, the little hat and the shirt and the vest, like he's sitting at a Dublin bar or in, being like somebody's heavy. That's not a bad idea.
That would
like
be kind of cool.
I like that idea.
Orton wins it and Sheamus becomes his muscle. That'd be pretty cool.
Hmm.
But then what becomes of the Demon Kane?
Who cares? God, I'm so done with that. Ugh, terrible.
As for my pick, I think... I think they'll give it to Cena.
Oh, sorry.
I thought he was doing Stardust.
But there's nobody here to do... No one does that better than JR does. So.
No, I think Cena will win just because I think that they're penciling in Cena versus Brock right now.
Okay.
At SummerSlam. So.
Yeah, because he's a safe baby face that can always lose and nobody cares.
Sure. Yeah,
and nobody'd care. Reesh?
You know, right before they added Kane at the last second, I said to myself, man, this is one of the most loaded Money in the Bank matches that they've ever had. And it's not just because of the belt, even though the belt puts a lot more on the line than just the briefcase for the title shot.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the fact that they have seven guys that are different in a lot of ways, but at the time it was seven. But they were all so capable of doing so many different things. And, you know, we saw an Elimination Chamber match involving a lot of the same people. And it went about, I think, about 30-plus minutes. I think this one's going to go 30-plus minutes. I think this is going to go basically epic time. And the safest bet is obviously the one that I have to go with. That's the hometown guy. That's going to be John Cena, even though I think the fact that they're in Boston doesn't really mean that he has to win the title. It's just a circumstance of, like, they just happen to be there, and it's his time to win it back. And there's some also good possibilities. I really want to see how Roman Reigns does on a main event stage in a title match. This is his first time, really. And so I'm interested to see how the crowd reacts to him, because if he gets a really big babyface reaction, that's going to make him for the rest of the year, really. And Bray Wyatt is still pretty hot, and Randy Orton's still doing pretty well, getting back on the singles trail.
You know that if Bray Wyatt starts climbing that ladder, that place is going to go ape shit. I know, I'll be there. I know I will.
It's gonna be great. And Sheamus is still he's working great matches. I mean,
he is. Really, I will say that I agree with you. As much as his face turn irritates me, still is. I just love him better. Like I said, I think it was last week. The network stream had Money in the Bank 2010, mm-hmm. and it was Orton Sheamus in a cage.
Cena and Sheamus in a cage.
Cena Sheamus in the cage. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And that was the whole Nexus thing and everything. And he just looks like such a bastard. He was mean. He like put over his strikes. He's just more intense, more determined when he's a heel, when he works.
And you have Cesaro, and you have all seven of those guys, and then comes Kane. So you're going to have all this characterization shit going on with Kane trying to win the belt and all that stuff, and that might even lead to a feud in Battleground, but Cena's going to win because you know what's coming down the line. And it's the biggest heel that the company really has.
Mm-hmm.
And you need a babyface with that belt. And I don't think you really have anybody else that you could put that belt on right now that can really carry it at least for the next few months with Daniel Bryan out. And that's going to be John Cena.
Benjamin. Almost every heel in this match, except Orton, could conceivably be cheered if he's climbing up the ladder. Bray Wyatt and Cesaro, that place will go, and again, I'll be happy to be participating in that, will go bonkers if either of those guys is within a fingernail of touching either of those belts. You know that. Does that affect anything in terms of what they do with this match? Is it, in essence, the only legit heel that you really have, and I won't even call Kane a legit heel because he's not legit anything anymore. The only legit heel you have in this match is Orton.
You forget Del Rio.
Oh, and Del Rio, but nobody cares about him here because they know he's gone at the end, in the middle. In another month and a half, he'll be sitting
with
Mill Sr. in his stupid mask, and his whatever sitting in some office in Mexico City booking Pierroth and Cybernetico or something.
To give him credit, he is performing well, though.
Oh, his matches have been fine, but he's not going to win.
He always performs well.
Yeah.
But he's not going to win. All right, so let me talk about the two main – all right, let me rephrase that. I apologize. Let me rephrase that. The two heels anybody cares about, Bray Wyatt and Cesaro, if either of them come within a fingernail of touching either of those belts, that place is going to go insane. Does the fan reaction to those two guys, you think it has any thoughts in the way the bookers are thinking about this match?
In a way, yes. Here is how I lay it down, because that does play a role in my prediction. And also, my prediction starts with what we discussed way back when we started talking about WWE as a company, and that's that they're a company waiting for Daniel Bryan to come back.
Mm-hmm.
They're a company that is trying to stay flexible in how they're booking the next couple months.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they've shut the door completely on Daniel Bryan being back for SummerSlam yet, and I think they need to buy themselves another month to figure it out. To me, that means as long as there's a possibility that Daniel Bryan could be at Battleground, which I don't think is out the window completely right now,
right,
a heel wins this match. So I don't think John Cena is winning this match. I think John Cena could beat said heel at Battleground if they decide that's the direction they want to go. They want to go Cena Lesnar for SummerSlam. Or if Bryan comes back, he could beat said heel at Battleground to set up something at SummerSlam. Or they could have said heel, depending on how they get over, go into SummerSlam to face John Cena, to face a returning Daniel Bryan, and maybe Brock Lesnar does something with Cena outside of the title match. Hmm. So that's part one, is that I think a heel is winning this match. The other half is that I think they do recognize that they need to do something to gain some interest here. And that does not mean giving the belt back to Randy Orton in a retread.
Mm-hmm.
It does not mean giving it to Alberto Del Rio in a win that no one would care about. I don't think Sheamus turns heel here. I definitely don't think Kane wins the title. So I do think, because of what you said, Scott, because they want a reaction, because they want a memorable moment to end this show,
mm-hmm.
it is going to go to one of the other guys. I think with Cesaro, as we've discussed, when he finally gets that belt, he's going to be a full-fledged babyface because there's money there.
Right.
I think they're going to wait on that. Something you said earlier in the show, and I bit my tongue because I knew I was going to talk about this later, Bray Wyatt is a wild card. Bray Wyatt is a guy who can get that first title win out of nowhere, and it's not going to hurt his character. It's something we've talked about in the past. So I'm going to go out on a limb and not make the safe choice. I'm going to say Bray Wyatt wins WWE World Heavyweight title on Sunday. I think it's the move that generates a buzz, and I think it's also a move that gives them flexibility because Bray could face Cena next month and you don't know who's going to win. I think Bray could potentially carry the belt into SummerSlam, and if Bryan returns there, he could face him there. I think Bray is the answer to WWE's problems right now as far as needing a guy who is going to be interesting on top, but also a guy who they can be versatile booking around. So that is my prediction, Bray Wyatt. And it also was a reason I picked Ambrose as my guy in the other ladder match, because I do think they'll split it babyface heel. And I think the night ends with all three Wyatts holding the gold, and that's the direction you're going to see coming out of Money in the Bank.
That's a tremendous theory. Getting back to...
I was just going to say, that could kickstart a Bray Wyatt face turn, too, because he's got all the gold, and then he doesn't do what the authority wants him to do.
Yep.
There's your natural, you know...
Yeah, there's your natural progression where he doesn't change his attitude because he rails about the authority. But that's in the case when the authority is good, or the mainstream is good. But now, if he's dealing with Triple H and Stephanie, things are different.
Look, in a lot of my predictions in the last few months that I've gotten wrong, it's because I always say what is going to lead to the most storylines coming out of it. That's why I picked Evolution to beat The Shield at back-to-back pay-per-views. So I'm thinking here, I'm being the optimist, and I'm saying I think Bray Wyatt winning gives them the most options. I think that babyface turn's an option. I think there is so much you can do right now with Bray Wyatt as champion. That said, Every time I picked that way, it's gone against me, but I'm still going to stick to my guns on it.
Here's the thing with Cena, and we'll talk. This will be the last thing we talk about before we go. If Cena loses, there's two schools of thought as to how. If he just loses because he just doesn't get to the briefcase or the belts, then obviously something needs to be kickstarted for him for the summer, going to SummerSlam.
Yep.
You can't just have him. You can't have nothing happen with Cena. Cena's not one of those guys that just kind of is lost in the shuffle. He's not a lost in the shuffle superstar. If he gets screwed, well, now you're inserting him into the. You're not going to continue the storyline with Bray Wyatt. That's done. You're not gonna have him get hosed by Seth Rollins. You're not gonna insert Cena into the Triple H authority thing. That would be an absolutely abominable idea. Do not do it.
That's where they're going.
Do not do it.
They sure hinted at it.
I can't see it happening. You don't keep Cena quote down. He's been too. That's not gonna happen. This isn't
he
like 7 years ago.
He can't buck the authority.
Is the authority. well. No, I'm only kidding.
I was just thinking that they've teased that so much that we don't even bite anymore.
I know.
It's almost lost its steam.
Yeah, it has. Yeah, but that's my only thing about Cena is. He just doesn't vanish in a match. That's not his. He's not Del Rio. He's not Sheamus.
He gets taken out.
He's either got to get taken out.
Yeah.
Three things happen. He either gets taken out, he's a fingernail away, and somebody hoses him, or he wins. He doesn't just not win. That's not Cena. He's too. There's too much cachet there.
Can I tell you the other one, non-authority related, that you're really not going to like? He doesn't win the belt, but it leads to a feud with Kane.
Oh, Jesus. Lousy ambulance matches.
But listen, here's the caveat there.
Bury Zack Ryder even further. I don't think you can. So.
Ryder's Revenge.
Is that the name of the July pay-per-view?
Eve Torres will be laughing on the couch this time. But the only caveat there is that instead of Cena winning the belt, it would be Reigns and Reigns feuds with Triple H and maybe Brock Lesnar.
I don't see Reigns.
I think that's too early.
Yeah, I don't see Reigns.
It might be.
Yeah. Gentlemen, we are complete. There's your Money in the Bank selections. The live blog will be fired up. I don't know who. I think Brad's going to be on. I'm sure you gentlemen will probably hop in Sunday night if you can. Obviously, the show will be on before. We have a contingent going to Boston, of course, led by myself and the PIC, Justin Cero, and a few other guys. We'll be back in 2 weeks. We'll talk about anything coming from Money in the Bank. We'll have a couple of switch things up, have a couple of different guys on. And we'll talk about other stuff going on and see if TNA has anything else to tell us. Probably not. For Andrew Reich, George Duncan, Willie, and Ben Morse, I'm Scott Criscolo. We don't know who's in the main event, but if you are, we're picking you. Enjoy Money in the Bank.
Hey, Scott, I got a great idea. What if Damian Sandow gets in the ladder match? He wins the briefcase. Cena wins.
Andrew,
Damian
that's very trivial. This is all trivial.
Shut up.
Actually, let me tell you guys about this trivia tournament I was in down in Rio Future.